Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We've seen the attacks on Russian refineries. So Russia is one, used to be kind of one of the biggest suppliers of diesel globally. And you've seen diesel exports being banned from Russia. And that's really tightened things quite a bit even further.
That's Alex Hodes, Director of Energy Market Strategy with StoneX.
Diesel prices are really the ones that are kind of outrunning the rest of the complex. Diesel crack spread, so meaning refining margins for crude oil to make diesel, are at all-time highs, approaching $100 per barrel. So really, that's just showing this constraint on the refining capacity globally and how it is diesel inventories are so tight and the possibility or potential to make more diesel supplies globally is very constrained.
And we see that especially domestically, but what about overseas? Indonesia could emerge as a significant new market for U.S. ethanol if its new blending roadmap and trade agreement are fully implemented. USDA says Indonesia and the U.S. agreed in February to eliminate ethanol tariffs and remove barriers to U.S. imports, although formal implementation is still pending. Indonesia has a gasoline market of roughly 9.8 billion gallons annually. USDA forecasts only about 396,000 gallons of fuel ethanol consumption this year. So the government plans to expand from E5 to E10. That could create substantial potential demand. A gasoline pool could require roughly 489 million gallons of ethanol or 175 million bushels of corn at 2.8 gallons per bushel. E10 would roughly double that potential. Well, speaking of trade, weak domestic grain prices could limit China's commercial appetite for imported corn, even as political commitments create potential opportunities for U.S. ag. Retired USDA economist Fred Gehl says falling wheat prices and increased feed use of lower quality wheat have actually pressured Chinese corn values. Gehl says Chinese corn averaged $8.77 per bushel in early August. Additional pressure possible as the new crop arrives. Wheat purchases under China's minimum price program could provide some support, but weak downstream demand remains a concern. So for U.S. producers, economics alone currently offer limited encouragement. Cheap domestic grain and substitute wheat, well, they reduce China's need for imported corn, while some Chinese processing plants have also been idled. Well, U.S. ag export prices did strengthen in July, even as overall export prices moved lower, giving ag a firmer price signal than much of the broader export economy. Bureau of Labor Statistics data shows ag export prices increased about 1% for the month, roughly 6% more from a year earlier. Overall, U.S. export prices fell about 1% in July. Non-ag export prices declined by 2%, and so that divergence leaves ag among the stronger export price categories from the month. And this is Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit TexasCorn.org and become a member today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
You know, the initial volatility was when USDA made the announcement at the end of July that they were going to start the process of opening the border. And so that added, additional pressure to the summer correction. You know, the reality is when the border opens, they're going to start in northwest Mexico in Sonora.
Oklahoma State livestock marketing economist Dr. Darrell Peel talking about conditions in Oklahoma.
We've had a very long run of very high temperatures in Oklahoma, lack of rain, and it's forecast to continue for the foreseeable future here. And so we've seen a dramatic turnaround. Our pasture conditions are going backwards very rapidly. In fact, if you look at the national drought map, drought conditions are rebuilding in many regions and overall for the whole country. So, you know, I think we're kind of going backwards. Now, it is summertime, so we sort of expect hot, dry weather to some extent. But it's been pretty severe lately, and it's a, you know, there's some question about as we go forward how much impact that we might have.
Right now, the border reopening, packer closing, and dry weather all affecting the markets.
You know, the main thing it does is it just adds uncertainty. All of these things create uncertainty and volatility in the markets, and that's a very real impact that we're, you know, continuing to wrestle with and probably will for the foreseeable future. You know, in the grand scheme of things, some of these are kind of in process, so we have to wait and see how they evolve. I don't think the Mexican border opening is a major market factor ultimately. And, you know, as we grow back into it, probably, you know, certainly not before sometime next year, mid to late next year, maybe we see significant numbers. You know, the other issues, kind of the same deal. We have to wait and see how things play out a little bit. But mostly it's just the fact that there's so much dynamics in the market right now, so many things moving and so much uncertainty about what else is yet to happen that I think it's kind of keeping the market off balance a little bit.
Now, when we trade markets, sometimes it's technical, sometimes it's headlines, and other times it's fundamental.
You know, underneath all of this stuff we're talking about is the fact that the fundamentals have not changed. Yeah, we still have extremely tight cattle supplies. They're still getting tighter at this point. You know, the mid-year cattle report told us that we had a smaller calf crop again in 2026. The beef cow herd was down again on July 1. So, you know, we're still trying to find some stability in these inventory numbers. We're going to continue to see tighter feeder cattle supplies as we go into 2027. And in fact, you know, we're still looking for really strong indications that we're beginning heifer retention in any significant way. There are some minor indications that we're thinking about doing it, but when you look at drought conditions and other things, it's not clear, or it does suggest probably that we're not seeing very aggressive movement in that for the time being.
But what are the odds that we emerge from this on the other side and find we're in need of additional packing capacity?
It's entirely possible. You know, I think drought conditions early in the year probably, you know, sort of prevented some plans that maybe producers were thinking about. Now we're going backwards. You know, in some regions, at least, there will be a question of whether producers can follow through with any plans that they might have at this point. So it's again, it's going to keep it on a very slow, kind of cautious pace, I think, for the foreseeable future.
And this is Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Agriculture Today.
Cotton Incorporated, as you know, we were founded at a time when cotton had lost significant share to synthetic fibers. Over the following decades, we had a lot of great progress that happened as far as regaining some of that market share.
William Kimbrell, President and CEO of Cotton Incorporated.
Since around 2010, when we had the price spike in cotton, I really attribute a lot of some of the downward slide in that price spike. You know, we thought that it would be, obviously it's good for producers to get the value out of their crop. But what we saw was a significant amount of share erosion around that price spike, and people started to substitute other fibers into products, specifically, cheap polyester, cheap synthetics. So that, and then layer on things like fast fashion, layer on the lack of people pushing back against those synthetic fibers being in products, the lack of, and also, now that you can wear athleisure and those types of products in any setting. So it's really been very challenging for us to regain that share, but we're starting to see some of those tailwinds, and regaining market share from synthetics is really another critical component of this 2027 strategy. So it also is our approach, it can't be simply about promoting cotton. We really have to understand where cotton can win, where we can benefit, developing products and technologies that make us more competitive and driving that demand really throughout the value chain. And last chart that I'll show is just, we've also seen a significant shift in the manufacturing landscape. So cotton products are being made, where they're being made is changing significantly. It has changed significantly over the years. This chart on the screen shows kind of that geographic shift in U.S. apparel imports. You can see that China has fallen off substantially over the past several years. And we've seen a big rise and pickup in areas like South Asia, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, but also Southeast Asia with Vietnam. So that matters to us at Cotton Incorporated because our capabilities and relationships really have to move with the market. As we see these sourcing shifts, we have to make sure that we've got all of our technical expertise and product development teams, our market intelligence, and we're in the right place at the right time. So the strategy has to be very responsive, not only to what the market needs, but really also where that market is moving as well. So we're very focused on globalization and market shifts as far as manufacturing. So this rolls us into kind of our 2027 plan and how it was developed. One thing that is different about the planning cycle this time is we've really drawn a much clearer connection between industry strategy and how Cotton Incorporated invests and executes to support that strategy. So early on this year, Cotton Incorporated and the Cotton Board began working together on a 5-year industry strategic plan. This is the plan for 27 through 31, and it really establishes our key industry priorities. From there, Cotton Incorporated developed a scope of work, and the scope of work is essentially what we intend to do to advance those priorities. And then the last piece to this puzzle was the development of the annual plan, and that's taken the next step of really translating the strategy into actual programs, divisional responsibilities, and then ultimately the budget as well. So there's a very deliberate line from industry priorities to the work that we're going to be doing to the resources and execution of the program. So that alignment has really, we've done a great job kind of clarifying that and showing the importance because we want to ensure that the funding that we have is directly supporting the work and those industry priorities as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express water wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express water wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express water wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
So mandatory cool is back, and it is one of those issues that has been very divisive within the cattle industry for decades.
Sometimes referred to as cool or mandatory country of origin labeling. That's the CEO of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Colin Woodall.
About 25 years worth of time being spent on this issue. It did pop up recently in the Senate Ag Committee's discussion of their version of the Farm Bill. This was a priority for Senator Thune, who is the majority leader. And what he would like to see is USDA create a WTO-compliant mandatory country of origin labeling program. The only problem is that doesn't exist. That is something that the Obama administration with Secretary Vilsack worked really hard to figure out. How can they make mandatory cool WTO compliant in order to escape from the retaliation that both Canada and Mexico can levy upon us if we move forward with that? They never found it. The reason why they never found it is because the key part of that is mandatory. But here we are looking at that again, and it's a concern to us, one, because we now have a voluntary product of the USA label that is in place. It's something that Secretary Rollins finalized, and we are seeing the adoption of that, the utilization of that grow. But it's voluntary, and that allows these individual retailers to create the labels they need in order to be able to capture the consumer's attention. If you have a mandatory program, you're going to get what you expect from a government label, and that is black and white type. There are no flags. There's no red, white, and blue. There are no stars and stripes. It is black and white, what we saw when cool was law of the land for 6 years. So it doesn't really reach out and grab the consumer. On top of that, we're talking about going back to a law that exempted almost half of the beef that's out there for sale. So food service, restaurants, hotels, processed products, they were all exempted from cool. So we don't know how returning here, threatening our trade relationships, and not really being completely open with the consumer has any value. But unfortunately, here we are once again talking about mandatory cool.
That in the Senate version, but not in the House version.
So G.T. Thompson, the chairman of the House Ag Committee, worked really hard. Matter of fact, it was kind of a Herculean task for him to get his version of the Farm Bill both out of committee and then out of the House of Representatives. So we have been waiting for the U.S. Senate to pick up their version. That's what Senator Bozeman did the end of August, about the middle of August, rather, and it's right before they left for their August recess. And he tried. Unfortunately, the mandatory country of origin labeling amendment was included. But at the end of their markup, when they went to a vote, the vote failed. So we don't know what the future is. We don't know what's going to happen. Here we are as agriculture, not just the cattle industry, but all of us in agriculture, working on farm policy that was originally put in place in the 2018 bill. Lots changed in agriculture since then. We all need a new farm bill. We all need the new plan, the roadmap. But unfortunately, I'm not so sure we're going to see that. But we won't know until they get back after their August recess, which will be after Labor Day in September.
And coming up next February in Nashville, the Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show, or CattleCon.
It's also where we do the business of the association. Members coming in and making it very clear what they think and what NCBA needs to stand for, and that is the real foundation of the grassroots model that NCBA is built on.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
What are the real key factors that we need to pay attention to when we're harvesting corn silage so that we might have a crop that is good nutritionally for animals, whether they be dairy animals or beef animals?
Kansas State dairy specialist Dr. Mike Brook.
So as I think about that and I think about the fact that most of our silage is put into either piles or bunkers, there's really four main things I would encourage you to consider. The first one would be the whole plant moisture of the crop that you're ensiling. For corn silage, we really would not like to see that greater than 40% dry matter. And the reason for that is the packability of the crop. As we get above 40% dry matter, it's really like trying to pack a bunch of sponges together. You drive over it, and it just simply springs back, filling back with air, leading to a lot of spoilage and mold in your corn silage. Also, a lot of excess heating as well. So making sure that the dry matter of that material is somewhere between 36 and 38% will ensure that you have a material that will actually pack well. Second issue that we run into is how deep layers are we packing? If we have too deep of a layer that we're trying to pack, we simply won't pack it. It'll remain loose and we'll end up with increased spoilage and poor fermentation in that layer. So layers, as we spread that across the face of the silo, should be no more than 6 inches deep, and 4 inches would even be better. You don't have some sort of gauge on your blade so the drivers understand how deep of layer they're laying down, you need to have those. You also need to make sure you have the right number of tractors. How do we determine that? Number one, we look at the total tons that we're harvesting per hour. And we take that times 800 pounds. So if you're harvesting 200 ton an hour times 800 pounds, that would be about 160,000 pounds. That's a lot of tractor weight. And many people are surprised at that number. But if you have that much total tractor weight, which means you'll probably have to have three or four tractors packing that pile, you will get a decent pack as long as those tractors are always running while you're bringing silage to the bunker. One of the things that often happens is one tractor drops off for one reason or another, and now we don't have enough packing weight going on to that pile, even though our delivery rate to the bunker has not changed. So ensuring that you have enough tractor weight based on the tons that you're harvesting per hour is very, very important. Now, if we have wetter silage, let's say we're closer to 30% dry matter, can we get by with less tractor weight? Well, possibly. Some people use 600 pounds per ton as a rule of thumb to determine how many tractors and what weight we actually need. However, I want to caution you that if you always use the 800 number and you keep those tractors running all the time while we're delivering silage to the bunker, you should have an adequate pack on that material. Again, as long as you're obeying the rules for total plant moisture, as well as the layer thickness that you are packing. Final thing is, if we've gone to all this work to make sure we get it packed correctly, we need to make sure we get it covered as soon as possible. That seal on the top is very, very important in protecting what's underneath. So using an oxygen barrier followed by a layer of plastic is the best method to ensure that you'll have a good seal. And also make sure that you place on top of that plastic and barrier either tires or other materials that are going to hold that plastic tight to the silage mass.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
This is Agriculture Today.
You know, you've got mills and brands that are deciding what fibers go into their products. You have manufacturers that influence product development and what's being produced at scale.
William Kimbrell is president and CEO of Cotton Incorporated.
Brands make material and sourcing decisions that ultimately determine what products are in front of the consumer. So we continue to put greater emphasis in these areas to influence those decision makers, particularly trying to dive in and make sure that we're talking to the people that are making that fiber and raw material decision. So essential element behind this is, you know, the strategy is looking at really three parts. First is understanding. We need to have deep relationships with companies and people making decisions so we understand what their needs are. You know, what does performance look like? What are some of your sourcing challenges? What are your consumers telling you? So what types of compliance requirements are you facing? So ultimately, that having that understanding really enables us to solve for that and find a solution to those issues. So this is where Cotton Incorporated really has a very unique advantage. We can bring a lot more to the table than just marketing and conversations, but we can bring a lot of our technical experience, expertise that we have. We've got product development. We have a lot of sourcing resources. We've got compliance support and just really decades of research around cotton. So as we understand, you know, the needs of the industry, the goal is to take all of our capabilities and make them easier for these companies to access and really ultimately provide the right solution at the right time to those decision makers out there. And then the last component of this is really the conversion. You know, we need to convert. All the engagement has to get lead somewhere. We want to convert those relationships and solutions into product adoptions. We want to turn it into commercialized products and, you know, strategic partnerships with companies specifically around technologies or seal of cotton, anything that can really get more cotton on the shelf. So that's where we're putting greater emphasis. The consumer remains an important part of the strategy. We're not walking away from the consumer. Consumer demand, you know, ultimately creates a pull through that reinforces those fiber decisions. So what's changing is we're just connecting more deliberately with the supply chain to make sure that we're getting products on the store shelf. One of the clearest opportunities in front of us is around leaning into cotton's natural advantages. Cotton is fundamentally different from synthetic fibers. We are natural. We are renewable. We are a plant. We're not a plastic. We have Cotton Incorporated very deliberately has invested over years in a lot of science around biodegradation, microfiber pollution, microplastic pollution, and really understanding all of those impacts on both the environment, but also looking into, you know, impacts on humans as well, human health. So recent announcement of the Great American Cotton Plan by the USDA has really created a great opportunity for us to fully use and amplify kind of the science that we've created at Cotton Incorporated. So the opportunity is now moving beyond, you know, publishing the research and making the getting the research out there, but also putting that science to work in the marketplace. So we have some very strategic plans around how we're leveraging plant not plastic. We've already begun integrating that into all of our marketing efforts. You can see some of the images on the screen here, both our marketing efforts to the trade, but also our consumer marketing efforts too. And the approach for 2027 is really going to be to amplify this even further. We're going to be amplifying this through the research that we do, through the product development, through the marketing, and through all of our partnerships. So a great opportunity to leverage this. The way that I've kind of categorized this is our work with Plant Not Plastic is going to be amplification through integration. So we're really going to be integrating this through all of our marketing activities across the chain there.
It's Agriculture Today.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express Water Wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express Water Wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express Water Wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.